Welcome back to another episode of Palisade Radio. This is your host, Colin Cattell. On the line with us today is returning guest and friend Brian Pace Braga. Brian is the chairman of Thunderbird Entertainment. He also was the CEO of Lithium X before it got bought out last year for over $300 million. Brian, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me back, Colin. I was just actually watching our interview from April 2016. It literally seems like yesterday, but lots has happened for both of us since then.
Yeah, I didn't look back at the interview, but I remember distinctly you discussing your outlook for lithium and very forward thinking, because that was kind of at the early stages of when you formed Lithium X with Frank Giustra and then brought Paul Matysik in, and just had, you know, a very clear, concise outlook for why you thought the lithium market was going to see a drive up in demand and why there was a spot for shareholders to make money. And great to see that that all culminated in a huge success story for you. What's it feel like selling a company for $300 million plus?
Well, I think when we had the interview, you had brought up, and I hadn't even thought properly about it at the time, that all of a sudden Lithium X was a $100 million company. And then I think it was about 2 years after that, just under 2 years after, selling it for $265 million, just to correct you a bit. It was beyond. It felt like we had won the Stanley Cup. Something that was very important to me was every single investor along the way made money. We started the company raising money at 15 cents a share, then 30 cents a share, then $1.02, then $1.65, and then $1.90. And we were fortunate enough to negotiate and sell the company for $2.61 a share. And, I remember it vividly and every step throughout. And, your partner now, Paul Matysik, and on Victory Metals, and congratulations on that. And, you know, I was lucky enough to work with him. He's done it five times now. But I think I remember him telling me his first was always the sweetest. But, it was beyond. I feel very fortunate to be surrounded by the best people in the business and the different businesses that I get involved with. And at the end of the day, I found with venture capital and building businesses, really in anything in life, it's all about the quality of the people and the ambition that drives them.
Now, many people know that you work closely with Frank Giustra. We had Frank on the show, I'd say about 4 or 5 weeks ago, and he gave a pretty compelling thesis on why he thinks that gold is certainly a place to be over the coming years. Frank is renowned for not just being successful in the gold space, but also seeing opportunities in other spaces, being able to move around and take advantage of them as a venture capitalist. Has that influenced your kind of look at what you want to do moving forward? A lot of people in the resource space seem to get stuck there and never kind of move out into other avenues.
Yeah, no doubt. I think something that Frank and I share is actually just basic curiosity. Frank has been a life-changing relationship for me in my life, not only business-wise, but personally. And his outlook on life is very unique. He's a person that just doesn't believe in zero-sum situations. He's an individual that believes if you can create something big enough and have a big enough vision, that there's so many people that can win in that. And his success of creating many businesses that have had billions and tens of billions of dollars of value creation is remarkable. I think the other important thing about Frank is that he's not one to take credit for what he hasn't done. He takes credit for what his involvement was and what period of time. And I really respect that in him too. He definitely doesn't overpromote that. And I think he does his homework. With gold, it's something that has been fun for me to watch over the last 3 to 6 months. His thesis come in to play with gold really starting to move. And it's something that he wrote white papers about. I think he mentioned on your interview in the early 2000s and really predicted that. But it was all data-based. It was all information-based. And he went into the history books. And not unlike what I was able to do with lithium, it was a thesis. We were very fortunate. We executed the things that we had control of. We were able to execute on, but it was a thesis, and the thesis played out, and we executed remarkably. And I think that that's what any great business that is seeing a trend in the world happen that is very obvious. It's a matter of capitalizing an opportunity with the right people, and then if you are fortunate enough to have the right time, incredible amounts of value can be created in a very short period of time for shareholders.
Brian, you're 29 at this point?
No, I'm 31 now. I'm 31. I was 28, I think. Yeah, 28 when we first had our interview.
Okay, well, young nonetheless, and not going in much of a logical flow from my perspective at this point, but just to kind of go through how you got to such a successful place at a young age, and you know, not to speculate on your net worth, but it's in the tens of millions, which is very impressive and unusual for somebody at 30 years old. Go back to kind of how you got into the business and then how you formed Lithium X. You also had a part in the idea behind Hive Blockchain, and also going to talk about what you're working on now.
Yeah, I'm happy to. So my background was, I actually started working at a very young age. In my early teens, I was working at McDonald's, at Subway, at Starbucks. Why? Many reasons, but I just felt that working and making some money was an outlet for me that was positive. And I enjoyed those jobs. I enjoyed having the freedom of having my own money. I then bought my first condo when I was 14. It was an investment property downtown Vancouver before the crazy condo boom. And I started trading stocks when I was 17 years old. For very small amounts of money, but still trading nonetheless. And I found myself at 20 years old, after 2 years of university, the University of Calgary, studying finance. I just found myself in an environment at university that wasn't conducive to me. So I decided to drop out. At the time, filled with a ton of questioning and am I doing the right thing? But did it? My gut was telling me to do it. And I was very fortunate that in early 2009, right after the 2008 crash, that Q4 of 2008 was really challenging for me personally, because I just dropped out of university and come back to Vancouver to become this high flying financier, and all of a sudden the world collapses, at least the financial world. And, but then by March, 2009, by February, 2009, February 2nd, actually, I was fortunate enough to be hired on by a gentleman by the name of Stu Vorberg. And Stu, funnily enough, had hired Frank, Giustra back when he was, 22 years old, from Merrill Lynch, at Yorkton Securities. And the first part of Frank's career, was him evolving into what became the chairman of Yorkton Securities until the time he was, I think, just under 40. So for about 15 or 20 years, he was running that brokerage firm from the opportunity that Stu Vorberg had given him. Fast forward, I met Stu at 20. I got hired. We worked together for 4.5 years, raising capital for venture opportunities, mostly natural resource. I then worked at a small merchant bank in Vancouver, working on natural resource, but also starting to venture into medical devices, into tech. And then again in 2015, saw the opportunity with lithium, put my thesis together, and was fortunate enough to get capitalized by Frank Giustra, who had become a friend at that time. And we built that company from about a 3 million market cap to, as previously mentioned, a sale of $265 million after raising just over $50 million. And then during that time, Frank and I had become lead investors co-founders in a handful of businesses around the world, all in different industries, touching on the point of curiosity. And where I find myself today is in a role of, although, you know, take my age aside, I've been working for the better part of half my life. So I don't know, 17 years, I guess, since I had my first job. And that's not accounting babysitting or other small jobs. But I find myself actually in a role of mentorship to the CEOs that we support in our different ventures. And I'm really enjoying that role because something I've found with myself as even in Lithium X was I could see the story. I could see the opportunity to make money. I enjoyed liaisoning with investors. I enjoyed strategy, but actually I wasn't a great operator. Paul brought that operational skill set to the table. Paul Matizic, that was, and Bassam Mubarak, who was our CFO. But actually my skill set was kind of seeing where the puck was going, to use a Canadian sporting analogy. But to get in the corners and dig the puck out wasn't my skill set. So I feel very fortunate that every day I'm surrounded by great CEOs with a very high degree of ambition in the different industries that they're in. And I'm able to provide this level of support along with mine and Frank's platform of financial analysis and just a lens on what we believe to be pretty smart money that approaches these businesses and provides a real backbone to give the company an opportunity to have incredible growth in whichever industry that they're in.
Brian, there's probably a lot of people listening, really amazed with your story and wondering how they can get to the same place. And I want to talk about the power of mentors. Obviously, a lot of people could look with an angle of jealousy and wonder why Frank, why you're working with Frank and why Frank's working with you, and same with some of the others that you mentioned, like Paul Matizic and Bassam Mubarak, who I now get to work with. And obviously, those guys picked you. And it's not something where you just pick them, and they dedicate a good amount of their time and resources to helping you grow, but they see an investment paying off in that down the line. What can you kind of add to that, just in terms of the power of getting these mentors and how that accelerates your path forward?
So, Colin, not unlike you, being able to attract highly talented people and mentors, in my mind, actually just comes down to just the basic principles of treating people with respect, whether it is a mentor like a Frank Giustra or a Paul Matizic, or someone serving you a coffee or cleaning your table at a restaurant. I think the basics of just treating people with respect. But more importantly, in terms of business, I think anyone that I've worked with, that does come from a senior position with experience and success, approaching it with a really positive attitude and a lot of excitement is a great start, but also doing your homework. I think the biggest risk to anyone that's mentoring anybody and affiliating themselves with someone that is younger, less experienced is, assessing what is the downside risk of working with somebody that is younger. And I think really putting the mentors at ease with regards to respecting their voice. I find that in the world that we follow today, there's a lot of tech founders and CEOs that have super voting shares and have controls of companies. And I actually don't agree with any of this. I don't think that is, corporate governance 101, or at least what I've learned. The way that I like to approach things is a great mix between wisdom and financial backing in some people that like Paul and Frank, but also the young energy, because you're not going to be able to replace the ambition that guys like you and I have. And I think that's what was so magical about Lithium X and what created that success was there was that balance. And you know, then you get yourself in a position to be lucky, and we were, and that's what I continue to see in other ventures is you're just trying to get yourself in a position to score a goal. That's the only thing, you know, you can control is your hard work and your attitude towards something. And then sometimes in life, timing works in your favor.
Good. Well, Brian, today you're still an investor in the resource space. I think you share many of the same sentiments that Frank gave with our audience a few weeks ago in terms of the precious metals, gold, silver, the upside there. But you've also taken on a new role. And interestingly, you know, along the same lines of something Frank has worked on in the past, where he's stepped outside of the mining space in the 90s and built the largest independent movie studio in the world, being Lionsgate. You know, the landscape has shifted a bit, if you will, towards streaming, and you're now the chairman of a company called Thunderbird Entertainment, which is listed on the Toronto Venture Exchange under TBRD, and just announced last week as a chairman. Congrats on that. I'd love to hear what it is you're working on there, what your plans are.
Yeah, thank you. As I was watching the interview that we had in April 2016, it actually comes down to basic fundamentals that I learned with Stu that I commented on in that interview. And in the venture markets, there was three things that Stu always told me to focus on. It was capital structure, people, and timing. And I was laughing a little bit when I was watching this, because actually the start of Thunderbird was the structure has got, well, the capital structure is only 45, 46 million shares outstanding. Almost half of it is owned by insiders, you know, major investment from insiders. And the timing is, as you touch on, from when Lionsgate was launched to now, the facts that are coming through on how people consume content has truly changed forever. I just moved to London, England, and I watch people on the tube, you know, it's a city of 10 million plus people. And it's just like nonstop people watching their tablets or their smartphones. And there's a couple, you know, key metrics that I was reading up on. You know, the tablet wasn't even around in 2008. And now all of a sudden there's over 50% penetration of people in Canada with a tablet. Same with the smartphone. Smartphone was around, but it was only about 10% penetration. That's now over 80%. And what shifted in the media landscape is Netflix. Netflix wasn't around 30 years ago. Then all of a sudden in the last couple of decades, they've been able to prove that a subscription-based model works. And all the companies that provided them with their content over the last couple of decades, the publishers of that content, are now building their own platforms. And I didn't see a space, as I spent about a year and a half away from public markets. I was still investing, as you mentioned, but I hadn't really put my name and as a chairman or CEO behind a public company. Is I couldn't find a sweet spot. And then as I looked and dug deeper into Thunderbird, it just became so obvious that you've got between Apple, Disney, Netflix, Amazon, you've got tens of billions of dollars of money being spent every year, and it's only being serviced by a small group of service providers, one being Thunderbird. And quietly, and I said this in my quote, in typical Canadian fashion, Thunderbird's gone from a couple hundred employees to around 1,000. Their business has grown like crazy over the last, mostly in the last 5 years, but it's been around for 15 years now. And I've just felt like it's hit this inflection point where this infrastructure has proven to scale with Thunderbird and is able to continue to deliver great service-based business with these major companies. You know, it's like Apple being almost a $1 trillion company, and they're going to spend $6 billion, they announced $6 billion on content themselves. At the same time, what this environment has allowed is Thunderbird to evolve their business plan into, you know, someone can say, oh, that's just boring. They're just a service provider. You know, they'll make their 15, 20, 25% of EBITDA. And you know, why is that so exciting? Well, I'll tell you why it's so exciting. In this transition from traditional media to digital media and to SVOD, to streaming video on demand, and this transition from Netflix starting to build their own content, all of a sudden we can negotiate great deals and partnership deals with the likes of Netflix because they're in such high demand for content. So we can go and originate. The latest one that just came out actually in September was Last Kids on Earth. It's a huge kids and family success. It's number two actually on the New York Times book series list right now. It's in the same category as Harry Potter and ahead of Harry Potter actually right now as Captain Underpants. And this is something that we originated actually. Jennifer McCarron, who's the CEO, originated a couple years ago with the author of the book, was able to strike a deal, bring it to Netflix, negotiate a deal with Netflix where we made money on our service-based business with them. And now we're partners on this intellectual property. And the way I look at it from a business perspective is we have this great EBITDA generating business with the kids and family business and Great Pacific, which services customers like National Geographic, Discovery Channel. And then as a shareholder, you get this opportunity at, you know, at these flyers, and these flyers could be, maybe it's Last Kids on Earth, but maybe it's something else. And as this business continues to grow, I believe we're going to have handfuls of these opportunities. And if one of these comes in, most recently in August, Hasbro announced the acquisition of E1 for $4 billion. And a lot of the value of E1, if you read the analyst reports, was attributed to a kids and family property called Peppa the Pig. And, you know, for your listeners that have kids, I bet they'll all be like, oh, yeah, of course, you know, Peppa the Pig. You know, a lot of that $4 billion of value was that one piece of intellectual property. So when I look at the company and when I made my investments, and Frank's obviously made his investment, and insiders own about half the company, I just look at it where you've got a great capital structure, you've got an incredible management team led by Jennifer McCarron and Mark Miller. The founder, Tim Gamble, was a visionary since 2003 in bringing on Frank, acquiring Atomic, which is the kids and family business, acquiring Great Pacific. And it's just an untold story of a business that, you know, as of so 3 quarters into the year, did just under $50 million in revenue and has $17 million in cash and just has this incredible platform that I believe has the opportunity, not unlike Lithium X in the early days, to have multiples of value for the early shareholders that see this vision. And I'm excited to just go tell the story. And it's going to take some time because Lithium X took 2 years to go from, you know, 3 million market cap to $265 million. But, you know, I think that there's just great explosive growth opportunity in this business. And it's just under the radar. And I love telling stories. I love meeting investors. I look forward to seeing a lot of the investors that were investors in Lithium X. And, you know, excited to tell them why I put my money behind this company and why I've become the chairman.
Excellent. Well, Brian, a bit of a curveball question, my ignorance on the sector. I'm very familiar with resources and why they exist in the public space. You know, Thunderbird obviously can benefit from the visibility and getting a large shareholder base from being public. Is it typical for companies in the media space to be publicly listed?
Yeah, I think the answer is sometimes that what I've seen. So E1 was a public company that's got bought out for $4 billion. Lionsgate Films is obviously a public company. Why we wanted to go public was we felt that it's a great opportunity for the company to acquire other businesses. And I think if you remember Lithium X and that story, we made multiple acquisitions to build that business. And the public company gave us the opportunity to do that. Yes, it is a different sector being resources, but with Thunderbird, I do believe that the public markets are going to be a great place for us to create market capitalization and be opportunistic on acquisitions, maybe even the public in the private space that we acquire them at accretive levels and really show that cash flow per share generation increasing over time and the accretive nature of the acquisitions, I think it's going to give us a great platform to build off of. And it's where, you know, it's where I've had my success in my life is in public companies, and I'm very comfortable with them. So we're very excited, very, very excited.
Well, I wish you the best of luck in your new endeavor. I have to provide the disclaimer that I am a shareholder and have been buying stock over the past week or so. Thunderbird TBRD and Brian Pace Braga, chairman of Thunderbird Entertainment. Brian, look forward to getting you back on the program in the not too distant future.
Anytime, Paul. Thanks so much. I'm a big fan, Paul.
Think you understand the junior mining sector and you think that the participants in the mining sector, junior mining sector, are good people and kind people, hit the bid.
How violent that term could be, it actually could be quite violent. It could be a rip your face off uranium rally.
And the world is always going to need raw material. It's going to need copper and gold and nickel and so forth.
Totally destabilized. Hey, troll, did you hear what's going on in Yemen?